Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The odds of winning the big jackpot of the lottery are astronomical. Yet people, they play it. They play it a lot. Ticket sales for the Texas lottery hit a record $8.1 billion in this past fiscal year. That's according to the Texas Lottery Commission. It's a lot of money, and people tend not or not backing away from the lottery. So what does it mean that people have this impulse to play the lottery, even though intellectually we know basically impossible for us to win? What is your brain doing with that lottery information? What does it mean for our economy? Is this the best way that we can be allocating those dollars? And also, what happens if you do win the lottery? Is your dream come true, and could it turn into a nightmare? What information having it now could help you if you do happen to win the lottery, which basically is impossible. So give us a call. What are your lottery dreams? What do you want to do with these dollars? Why do you play the lottery? And why do you not play the lottery? Are you like one of these folks that is very much aware how difficult it is to win, and yet you don't play? Give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255. That's 833-TPR-TALK. You can tweet at us at TPRSource, and you can email us at thesource@tpr.org and text us at the call-in number 833-877-8255. We're joined by Kara Smith, PhD, Assistant Professor of Economics at Belmont University. And Dr. Kara Smith, it's great to have you today.
Oh, thanks for having me, David.
Also with us is Daniel Levine, PhD, Professor of Psychology at the University of Texas at Arlington. Dr. Daniel Levine, great to have you today.
Yes, thank you for inviting me.
And with us also to give us some legal advice, he said he can't give you actual legal advice. We can talk about it, you know, hypothetically. Manfred Sternberg, lawyer at Manfred Sternberg and Associates in Houston, and he specializes in lottery winning. And Manfred Sternberg, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David, for inviting me.
So first, let's go to, I'm really interested in the psychological aspects of this, but there's so many big questions that need to be answered here. So Daniel Levine, explain to me what happens to our brain when we play the lottery, even though we know we're not going to win.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are areas that are involved with reward, whether it's a legitimate reward or like from personal relationships or happiness with work, or whether it's a drug. There are particular reward circuits that just light up. And in a certain sense, we are addicted to a lot of activity in those areas. And the other thing to note is that by and large, people making decisions, even when they involve quantitative things, don't make rational mathematical calculations of my odds are such and such, and on the average I will gain this, or on the average I will lose this. Our probabilities, small probabilities of very important salient events, are magnified psychologically. So the difference between a probability of 0.00001 and nothing might be magnified if the thing that the probability of is real important, like getting very wealthy or a catastrophic loss, which is what accounts for insurance we take out. You know, I take out insurance as much as anybody does.
Buying a lottery ticket's a lot more fun than paying an insurance bill.
Yes, but there's a similar mechanism for both. We tend to, when we're thinking about probabilities in the abstract, not probabilities accumulate over time, but just somebody presents one thing and says, the likelihood of this is that the possibility that something might happen is more important to us than some number which tells us the likelihood it's going to happen.
Let me take a caller. Do you want to have a lot of chit-chat? Call in. Tell me what you think about the lottery. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, and we have Mark on the line. And Mark, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello there. Interesting you mentioned probability versus possibility, and of course it's the probabilities that, you know, of course math and all that. But two things. First of all, I told myself a long time ago, if I was to win some sort of a big astronomical number, the first thing I would do is keep my mouth shut. Wouldn't even want to tell my wife because she'd have to tell her mother, and Lord, that woman cannot keep a secret. So there's that. And then the other part is that I play, maybe $40 a week here and there, but I call it my license to dream. It gives my mind a place to have some recreation on what I would do if I was to win the big fat one. And if you don't buy the license, you don't get the permission to do the dreaming. And so that's kind of how I plan it out. If I drank coffee, I'd probably spend more than that a week on coffee. So that's kind of how I view it.
Ever win anything?
I think my biggest, it was actually probably within about maybe 3-4 months ago, $500. And of course I've, chewed through that number, not too uncommonly if I'm, spending on other purchases for the lottery, but, $500, that's my biggest. And if I'm not mistaken, that's the maximum amount you can actually get a payout when you buy your ticket there at the grocery store type situation. Anything higher, you have to go down to the state or send in your form or that kind of thing.
All right, Mark, thanks for calling in. Let me go to Manfred Sternberg, lawyer, about this. Because Mark mentioned a couple of things there. He says he's going to keep it completely anonymous. Not even going to tell his wife. I don't know how that's going to work out. Hopefully he doesn't win the lottery, so he has to deal with that. But how can you keep it secret? How much leverage is there to do that?
Well, Mark has got it right. Keep your mouth shut, because that's always been my advice. Once you win and you start telling people, especially those poor people that go on TV and they hold up the check and everybody sees them, and the good guys see them, but the bad guys also see them, and they become a target. So Mark is 100% right. Keep your mouth shut. Whether he tells his wife or not, depending on if he lives in Texas and how he bought it, it's probably community property. But if he doesn't want his wife to tell, and that, that's his decision, right? One of the first things that you do want to do is make a copy of your ticket and put it in a safe place. And the reason that you want to do that, it's like a $100 bill. If a $100 bill drops out of your wallet onto the ground in the mall, that $100 bill is going to belong to whoever picks that up and puts it in their pocket if you don't see it. And that's what happens often, that people will give somebody the ticket, or they bought the ticket with somebody and somebody else has the ticket. And so it's what we call bearer paper, B-E-A-R-E-R, bearer paper, just like a dollar bill is bearer paper. Whoever holds it owns it. And so you want to be careful. So make a copy, put it in a safe place. Don't promise anybody anything. Don't tell anybody anything. It's hard not to tell anybody anything, but the more people you tell, the more chances you have of having people come to you, ask you for loans or to sign something. And really, you don't have to call me, but you should call an attorney to make sure that, when you win $500, you don't have to call a lawyer. But if you win $500,000, you should. And also a financial planner. If you're not good with money before you win the lottery, you probably won't be good with money after you win the lottery. So you should take precautions and make sure you know what you're doing with the winnings and how you're treating the corpus of those winnings. So that you can have it for years to come. A lot of people win the lottery and then they go broke. They promise people cars and houses, et cetera, and before you know it, they're gone through the money. So that's a sad situation that you want to avoid.
Okay, and so you did not say to sign the back of the ticket. So does that not mean anything?
Well, if you sign the back of the ticket, you can't unsign it. So if you sign it and you sign it in your name, then you're going to have to take that prize in your name. If you don't sign it and you wait and talk to a legal counselor like me, we may say, let's put it in a trust, or some other type of somebody else may go as your nominee to go pick up the winnings, because otherwise when you sign it, your name's on it, you're going to have to go pick up the winnings, and your name becomes published as well.
So I would instead maybe sign it as Awesome Trust Limited or something like that, or maybe establish some sort of foundation so that we could hang on to more of the money before taxes?
If you do that, you're committing to it. So you should talk to someone about the legal ramifications of what you're trying to do before you sign it. But if you sign it like that, then there's no unsigning it. So you've then chosen a road to go down, and that may be good. It may not be good, but you're right. Signing it turns it into pay to the order type of paper as opposed to bearer paper.
Right.
And so it's less.
And now, Kara Smith, professor of economics at Belmont University. So, like we said, $8 billion in this fiscal year in Texas, that was the number of tickets that were sold, amount of tickets. That's a lot of money. And is that the best way that those dollars should be flowing around if people think it's going to be for the benefit of, say, like schools?
No, that's such a great question, David. I think one thing is we have to set aside the assumption that having a lottery for education will actually increase funding for education. And I think in one sense it sort of obfuscates an important discussion, which is how do we ensure that our schools are fully funded? I think for the most part, those earmarks for education are not entirely sincere. I think there's a lot of recognition that they don't actually increase funding for education dollar for dollar. And some estimates would suggest it hardly increases funding for education at all. It doesn't mean that playing the lottery isn't necessarily irrational. You know, if you buy a $1 lottery ticket, depends on the game, but an average of 66 cents comes back to you in winnings. And then, of course, you know, one of your caller previously suggested that he liked to play because it was a license to dream, right? So there's some monetary value there to him. And then also, if you do value the public good that's being funded, that's going to be an additional value for the purchaser. I do think it's dishonest, though, if we want to think about this as an easy way to increase funding for a particular objective.
So when we look at the entire lottery pie and where the money goes to that the state collects with the lottery, 66% of that goes to paying out for prizes. It doesn't necessarily come back to me if I bought a lottery ticket, because I always buy the wrong lottery ticket.
Well, that's exactly right. It is a peculiar kind of product that we buy, because we know that when we spend a dollar, we're spending a dollar on something that is just on average, our expected return is going to be around 60 to 70 cents. And it varies, right? We know that numbers games tend to return a little bit more and instant games tend to return a little bit less, although, you know, there's a lot of variability there. So you have to get some value from the game, right? That psychological impact has to have some value to you for it to be a reasonable decision.
Right. And so about 25% of the money that state rakes in for the lottery goes actually to education funding. But, you know, the question is whether or not the state backs off its other funding mechanisms for schools because they know they're going to get this lottery money.
That's exactly right. And the evidence is pretty strongly in favor of that happening for the most part in most states that earmark for one program or another. You know, education is a very popular earmark, and in Texas, you know, it started as a general fund lottery in 92, and then in 97, it went to as a dedicated revenue source for that foundation school fund. And even at the time, you know, public discourse was pretty clear that, you know, there was a recognition this wasn't actually probably going to increase funding for education very much in the long run.
The lottery went into effect in Texas in 1991. Governor Ann Richards was the person who bought the very first lottery ticket, and it was promised as a way to help fund education. And over the years, that promise has been tightened up through legislation, and people are expecting more and more people to play the lottery in Texas, even though the state has cut considerably its advertising budget for the Texas State Lottery. Maybe you've seen fewer commercials for the lottery. That's and fewer big events for the Texas Lottery. That seems to be the thing. So why now? Why are people now attracted attracted to playing the lottery. These are kind of grim times, and maybe that's something that people can do to give them a little jolt. We'll find out. We'll talk about that some more when we come back from the break. Why do you play the lottery? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Benjamin, hang on. I'll get you on right after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the lottery. What if you actually won the lottery? And is it just nuts to even think that that's actual possibility? Because, I mean, the odds are just so astronomical that it's just not going to happen. It's very rare. But then you say, hey, it has to happen to someone. Maybe it could happen to me. That's a rationalization. And it's fun to play that game. So what do you do? How do you play the lottery? What would you do if you won? Have you really worked it out in your brain? Have you done that sort of like, I know exactly what I would do? Well, tell us. Maybe I'll take some of your ideas from when I actually win the lottery. So do you have a hard limit on what you spend on the lottery? Have you seen that maybe you become a bigger player over the last couple of years during these COVID years because people are looking for ways to find some light? Give us a call. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Benjamin, thank you so much for hanging on. You're on the air, Benjamin. Go ahead.
Well, the only time I played it, I was invited to a friend's house for Thanksgiving, and we all, scratched off the tickets. But I was told in elementary school, if you just save your money for 30 years, anyone can retire a millionaire. It just takes 30 years.
Benjamin, thank you so much for that call. So let me go to our economist, Dr. Kara Smith, Belmont University. If you didn't play the lottery and you put all the dollars that you spent in there, if an average person did that in over 30 years, you'd probably have quite a nest egg, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Depending on how you invest your money, you know, that's going to grow. Money put into a lottery ticket on average is going to shrink.
So let me go to Daniel Levine, PhD, professor of psychology at the University of Texas at Arlington. So you talked earlier about the reward system of the brain, dopamine, and and how that's connected to buying lottery tickets. That's why they use a lot of bright colors, and they try to make these things as festive as possible to do, and like a game, even though you're spending money on nonsense. So, but we know that the dopamine release system actually give a bigger jolt of dopamine in anticipation of winning than in actually winning itself. Is that why people are drawn to playing even though they keep losing?
Yes. I mean, look at also compulsive gamblers, people who keep losing and thinking, well, now is the time I'm going to win. They think, well, the odds are in favor of my winning now because I've lost so much, which logically speaking is not true. But it is the dopamine rush to the particular reward areas. And the other thing I'd like to mention is that I've seen some studies showing that measuring people's happiness, that lottery winners are, if they are happier than non-winners or people who don't play at all, it doesn't last very long. Within about a year, they're just as happy or unhappy as anyone else. So it's a very short-term kind of thing. It's certainly not a rational calculation of future happiness that's going on.
So let me ask Manfred Sternberg about that, lawyer at Manfred Sternberg and Associates in Houston, and you do have this as a specialty, as a service that you provide, because people are not very good at handling this type of big jackpot in their lives all at once. You don't tell us anything, and I know you wouldn't, because that'd be a violation of all sorts of things, but what have you observed? You know, personally, have people managed to be smart about this, or do they not?
Well, I've been practicing law now for 36 years, and I've come to realize that once you put money on the table, people go crazy, especially if you put a lot of money on the table. There's a lot of people that go crazy. So the not telling anyone is really key. Like I said before, if you're not good with money before winning the lottery, after the lottery, after you win the lottery, chances are you're not going to be good handling that money afterwards. It pays to have a financial advisor and or a lawyer who are typically different people.
Right, but if a person runs into, just the day after the lottery, and a guy you know shows up and you start screaming at the boss, telling him to go jump in the lake, and he turns his desk over and tells everyone, I'm going to see you suckers later, and maybe never, and you say, that guy may have won the lottery, you know, and maybe people can sort of sniff this out.
Right. Well, when he does all that, because he's got money, because he turned that desk over, someone's going to potentially sue him for that, because now he's a target, because he's got actual money. So be cool. Don't do anything you'd regret, like, you know, vandalizing or what have you, or even telling your boss off. I mean, maybe that'll feel good in the moment, but quite frankly, that's not in your best interest to do that. All things being equal, it typically is in your best interest to keep it quiet, keep it to yourself, tell whoever you need to tell. If you're 18, there's no reason you have to tell them. And even if they're over 18, there's no reason to tell them. It just depends on your relationship with your kids and your spouse and what you want to do. But the biggest thing that you can do is make a copy of it, put it in a safe place, and go get counsel from someone who's been through this either once or 100 times. That's really the best advice. One of your callers before, I think it was Benjamin, said that they had tickets at Thanksgiving. You know, that's a recipe for disaster. Someone just needs to win $100,000 at the table and watch the other people say, well, we want part of that because we're all together or we bought the ticket. And so it becomes pretty sticky, especially when you're buying tickets among a group. It doesn't hurt just to write it down on a single page of what you're going to agree to do, because there are people that do it as a pool at the office, right? Everybody puts in $10 and then they go buy tickets. And if they win, I've had clients like that. And there have been other people who didn't participate in that week. And so what do they do with the person that didn't participate in the buying of the ticket that week? Well, it does not help to go back to the office and tell everybody how much money you made, because the person who didn't put their money in that last week is going to find a lawyer that will sue to try to get his or her share of that pot, jackpot. So there's all sorts of traps for the unwary. Best policy is to keep it to yourself.
As hard as that may sound like to actually do, because, you know, people are going to show up with a fleet of Teslas and everything else in order to flaunt their wealth. But let me ask you, so Daniel Levine, a professor of psychology, University of Texas at Arlington, in 1991, as the lottery was being kicked off in the debate before, it was a constitutional amendment that Texans had to vote for in order to get the lottery in place in Texas. People were warning that this was going to be a gateway towards compulsive gambling. We're going to have a lot more gambling problems in Texas. Do we know if that actually happened or not? And does playing the lottery, does that sort of get a person more interested in gambling?
Yeah, I think it would make people more interested in gambling. I haven't seen statistics for how much there has been, although I do know that those places like Windstar and the Choctaw Place have gotten increasingly popular, and that's all. I don't remember when those areas opened, those gambling areas, some of them out of state opened, but I think it was much later than 1991.
Right, that's why Nevada is one of the few states that does not have a state lottery for some reason.
Yeah, because they already have so much gambling there.
Right. So, Dr. Kara Smith, who's the most likely? Who do we know is the typical lottery player?
Yeah, that's a great question. We do know that, you know, the average lottery player is going to be, you know, play tends to increase with folks that have less formal education, older folks, minority status, lower income. Not necessarily the folks that we want to be targeting as an extra, you know, place to find revenue to fund education or any other public program. It's a highly regressive form of taxation. And I will say that compared to any other good we buy, you know, when you purchase a lottery ticket, based on the most recent Texas data, you're paying on average about a 37-38% tax rate on that expected prize of, you know, that 66 cents on the dollar. And so that's a really steep tax rate on a good that's largely being purchased by folks that are on the lower end of the income spectrum. So from a public finance perspective, it's not the ideal approach to raising revenue.
Right. And Texas has done a pretty good job of not having electronic lottery, you know, like we see it in other states. You cross the border into Louisiana, you see them right away, those gaming systems. And that is a plague on poor people for sure, isn't it?
You know, I actually don't have, I don't know about those in particular. I do know that in general, the sort of play that's very compulsive, so that would be instant game tickets, tend to be a lot more regressive than, say, the larger number games like Powerball. So certainly that fits within that paradigm.
And so Daniel Levine, we know that scratch-off tickets are far and away more popular than the winning the quick pick big lotto jackpot games. So why is that?
Well, probably because they take less effort.
You get the instant gratification. You find out right away. You don't have to wait 2 days if you won or lost.
Right.
All right, so we're taking a break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation about the Texas lottery. If you got a question, a comment, if you want to tell us your lottery dream, we'd love to hear it. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. When we come back, we're going to find out what about those taxes. How much in taxes do you got to pay? And it could be a lot if you win the big lottery. And what are some ways to minimize that tax payout? You know, what are the tricks? We're going to hear about that. Question, call in 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
A legendary curandera did more than just heal.
So here you have Teresa Urrea, this 18, 19-year-old curandera. She's healing people, but she's also saying, you don't have to listen to these authorities. You can disrupt these power structures.
Borderlands Curanderos, next time on Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the lottery. Is this a benefit or not so much for the economy, for our society? Who plays the lottery and why? And what would you do if you won the lottery? 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to a caller, John. And John, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Dave, just a quick question. I mean, just a quick comment. You guys are talking about the profile of a typical lottery player. You know, I kind of disagree with that, and I don't want to misquote anybody, but they talk about being somebody with a lesser education, maybe more hard up money. But I used to work for the lottery years ago, and my territory was a hill country here around San Antonio, these very affluent areas like Bernie, Fredericksburg, Kerrville, and they sold just as many tickets, if not more, than they did on the east side or the west side of San Antonio. But the denominations they sold, they were a lot bigger. They sold the $50 tickets. They sold the $20 tickets. When people would buy the Powerball or Mega Millions, they jumped $100, $200 at a time. So to say that profile is kind of narrow, it's not. It's really diverse. I mean, it's a huge cross-section. And at one time, they used to say that the lottery was a way for the government to collect the tax that they wouldn't normally be able to from lower-income people. And again, that's bunk because go out to the hill country and look at the volumes of tickets they sell out there, and that'll totally, you know, put that to poo-poo. But anyway, thanks for your time, Dave. I appreciate it.
Well, John, thanks for your call. We appreciate that. And so, Kara Smith, you want to react to that?
Yeah, sure. I really do appreciate his comment, because for sure, you know, I'm generalizing and suggesting, you know, there's really decades of research that show that it's a regressive tax, meaning that, you know, a greater share of lottery tickets are purchased by folks that are on the lower end of the income spectrum. But that doesn't mean that there aren't players that are all across the income spectrum. And in fact, a lot of my research is looking at what are some ways that you can tweak the lottery to be more appealing to higher income folks and kind of draw them in. And for sure, earmarking for these goods like education, or especially higher education, that are of a greater benefit to higher income families, has some marginal impact on drawing those folks into as players of the lottery.
All right, let's go to another caller. Charles. Charles, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say about the lottery, I only buy 3 tickets a week, the Monday one, the Wednesday one, and Saturday for the Texas Lotto. Mm-hmm. That's $6 a week. That's what I spend. I don't buy any other thing. And what I get out of it is hope. I hope against hope that I'm going to win. And it's something, you know, because I wouldn't have any hope any other way but if I won the lottery.
All right, Charles, and I'm hoping you win too. So that's 2 of us. Daniel Levine, professor of psychology at the University of Texas at Arlington. Hope is a good thing. Is false hope, is that a good thing?
Well, there's such individual differences in how people deal with hope. I mean, there's some people who repeatedly get their hopes dashed or not, and then they just come back for more. And other people react very quickly to a false hope. Even something like thinking the Cowboys are going to win the Super Bowl and then reacting to their loss. And some people just overreact, and other people just keep right on going. So hard to make generalizations about hope.
Well, let's get this tax question answered. So in case you win, have hope that you might win, and then have a plan to deal with taxes. Manfred Sternberg, lawyer at Manfred Sternberg & Associates, and keep that name ready at your fingertips when you win the lottery in Houston. So what should people do about taxes, and what can they expect if they win the big jackpot?
Well, you can expect that the government will take a portion of the prize up front. I think it's 25% they take out in the beginning. And I'm not a tax guy. I'm a lawyer, but the tax professionals is someone that you should also talk to, depending on how much you've won and how you want to take it. Is it going to be individually, or are you going to take it as man and wife, or are you going to take it between you and 4 other people? So everybody's situation would be slightly different, but a tax professional would be someone that you certainly would want to get advice from. And the money that you do win is ordinary income. So it's an ordinary income gain, and it is reported to the federal government. And if you owe money for, I think, child support and some student loans, et cetera, they may take that out before they give you the balance of the funds. So they do check to see if you're delinquent on any taxes to the state, and they deal with that up front. And the IRS, of course, takes its chunk out up front. So be aware of that. And you can maybe minimize it by taking the payments over time, but then you're trusting that the state is going to invest the money wisely and you'll get it over 20 or 30 years. That's really when they say you're going to win $750 million, that's if you take it over time. If you take the cash payout, which is usually recommended, it's much lower.
So, but to get away from the taxes, is there a way that you can maybe split? So you're a golden-hearted individual and you want to give a big chunk of your lottery winnings to a foundation or a charity or something, and so they use this, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to do good for the public. Is there a way to divide up the ticket in a way that can be done and that they wouldn't have to pay taxes on their end, so they would have more to work with?
Sure. If there was existing charitable organization, typically a 501c3.
Say imagine if there was like a public radio station that people would like to support.
So if they won the lottery and they want to give half of it to NPR, I would assume that it's a nonprofit that they could give that money to, and that would be tax deductible, right? So just like giving money to any charity would be tax deductible. But again, I'm not a CPA, but a CPA could guide you through that and make sure that what you do is compliant and that the IRS doesn't have a problem with what you've done or how you've split it.
So another incongruency that people have about playing the lottery, Daniel Levine, and you're a professor of psychology at UT Arlington, so you can help me figure this out. People will play the lottery when the jackpot is huge, super huge, like $1 billion or something like that. But, you know, when they say it's like 4 million or 40 million, it's kind of like, I don't know. It's, but, you know, it's like, what, you don't want $4 million? I mean, how do people kind of decide when they're going to play the lottery?
Well, everybody's different. I mean, some people will say that $40 million is a lot. Some people won't. I don't think there's one number that's the magic number for everybody.
But there seems to be, like, when the jackpot gets big, people say, well, man, now it's worth it for me to spend my $10 on.
Yeah, people's estimation of how much something is relative. You know, like, you know, to take an example that's separate from the lottery, if somebody who's been earning minimum wage gets offered a job that pays $80,000 a year, it'll seem like a lot to them. But if, you know, a high-powered executive with a six-figure salary who gets laid off and has to take $80,000 a year, they won't. So people's estimation of how much money feels like a lot to them is relative to what they have come to, what they have, and also what they've come to expect. So if people read about, you know, people read about a billion-dollar prize and then they see only a million, well, that won't seem like much.
But only a million, yes. So Dr. Kara Smith, looking at this through economics, you know, we should be looking at what benefits the entirety of the economy, you know, the pie, the big pie itself, and having a state lottery and people getting some joy out of it, or does that factor into that?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to add also, in terms of those large prizes that you were talking about in Powerball, it does actually become more rational to buy tickets when the prizes are enormous. It does increase your expected value. So that's one piece of that puzzle. I think the key with purchasing lottery tickets, you know, if you're buying a ticket out of your entertainment budget, out of pleasure and enjoyment, chasing that hope, I think that's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. You don't want to think of it on an individual level as part of your financial plan, right? As far as a public finance perspective, I think the key is to remember that, you know, raising money from one source, if you simply reduce your contributions from another source to a particular project or a particular fund, such as with your Texas schools, you're not actually increasing the benefit to your schools. I mean, that's, you know, you just want to have an honest conversation about that and kind of look at trends over time.
So, but if I buy the lottery and I lose, and it's today, and it's like $4 million or something, then I only lost $4 million. I won't be that sad. But if I lost $1 billion, then I'm going to be a lot sadder.
But you were more likely to, you know, the expected prize is larger, even though your chances maybe aren't any better of that $1 billion prize.
So what do you think the direction is, the trend is with lotteries? We've seen that states have been trying to expand them. It's easier to try to make the lottery jackpots bigger and more money for the state than actually increase tax rates and ways. So, Kara Smith, you see lotteries, they're here to stay?
I can't see them going anywhere. And even recently, you know, we see some of those big jackpot tickets going from $1 to $2 to goose those prizes to make sure they get larger and just draw in more players. So I certainly think the trend is towards more of this sort of gambling and not less.
Kara Smith, PhD, Assistant Professor of Economics at Belmont University. Also with us, Daniel Levine, PhD, Professor of Psychology at the University of Texas at Arlington. Manfred Sternberg is the lawyer at Manfred Sternberg & Associates in Houston, and they will help you when you win the big lottery. And good luck to you. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Remember, Texas Public Radio if you win the lottery. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.